This is Man-at-Arms, and you are listening to the Masters of Grayskull.
Thank you, Mr. Gary Chalk, as Man-at-Arms from the 2002 He-Man and the Masters of the Universe cartoon series for giving us that promo. I'm, of course, TFG, and Mike joining me is Optimus Solo. Hello, sir.
Hello.
We just want to put this at the beginning of every episode for Masters of Grayskull. We dedicate every single episode of this to the memory of Dean Stephan. Dean, who was the writer, story editor, all that kind of stuff on the 2002 He-Man series, passed away May 15th of 2018. And not only are we doing this because we're finishing our Powers of Grayskull series podcast, we're also, I feel at this point, doing this in the memory of him because the stories that he helped create and build for this series, it revitalized the MOTU franchise, in my personal opinion.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's unfortunate that we didn't have a chance to ever talk to him for the show, but we can at least remember him as we move forward.
Absolutely. And now, on with the show.
I am Adam, Prince of Eternia, defender of the secrets of Castle Grayskull. This is Cringer, my fearless friend. Fabulous.
Yes, that's a motorcycle farting.
I thought that was a freaking battle cat. All right. Hello, this is Optimus.
Hello, retake
to the 109. What?
Retake.
What?
You broke up. Hello, this is Optimus, and then it was silent, and then Solo. I'm like, what the hell? I thought you choked on something.
No, that was you. All right.
Technical difficulties. Let's move on, shall we?
Hello, this is Optimus Solo, and welcome to the 109th chapter in our Powers of Grayskull series. With me for this journey into the Masters of the Universe franchise, as he has been for the other 108 chapters, TFG and Mike, hello. Are you ready to return to Eternia, sir?
Of course, because we're actually on Eternia, not some distant dumbass world.
Yeah, we don't have to worry about spacesuits and oxygen and rocket ships and things of that nature, so...
No, it's just undersea armor.
Yeah, basically. So in this episode of Masters of Grayskull, we'll be giving you our thoughts on the next three episodes of the series, which is Episode 4, Courage of Atom, Episode 5, Sky War, and Episode 6, The Deep End. What was that? Lady Gaga? Something about a deep end? Anyway, so we're hope you're ready because it's time to go back to Eternia.
I'm sure she likes to deep throat a few things.
But... I'm on the deep end.
God, please don't. I swear to God, even though we're actually to the good series right now, I swear to God, you start singing Adele, I will fucking leave this podcast and you'll have to do all the work.
It occurred to me, the appearance of this He-Man from out of nowhere... is reminiscent of how the elders and their power mysteriously disappeared. The conclusion is clear.
It is?
Skeletor has cleverly deduced that He-Man must somehow have gotten hold of the elders' power.
Precisely. And to access that power, I have only to capture He-Man.
All right, first up today is Episode 4, The Courage of Atom. August 2002, written by Dean Stephan. All right, sir. Skeletor takes Prince Adam hostage to lure He-Man. His friends have to find a way to free the boy without jeopardizing his secret identity. Dun-dun-dun. What did you think of this one?
Well, considering only two friends actually know the secret identity, there's not many friends here to help him.
Right?
I mean, it's basically Orko and Cringer. I mean, Man-at-Arms is there, and that's great. It's basically Orko painting Cringer to look like Panthor.
Yeah, for the most part.
And I'm sorry, these evil warriors, like, we knew Trapjaw and Beastman and all of them. We knew they were dumb in Filmation. I almost want to say they're even more ignorant here, because Panthor, Cringer, dressed to look, painted to look like Panthor, looks nothing like Panthor's body. Does not have the green glowing eyes that Panthor has. Is way more timid, and he's got a sword sticking out of a saddle that's on him. Okay. Sure.
Yeah, so they mention in the commentary of this one, this is the only episode of today's episodes that had a commentary track on the DVD, mm-hmm. that this definitely has I don't even know if they mentioned it in there or if I read it somewhere, but this one obviously has a lot of similarities between the disappearing act from the original Filmation episode. As far as plot elements, they even talk about the fact that you get a quick shot of He-Man where it flashes and he's blue.
Yep.
For a second, which is a direct homage to Faker, etc. So you do get some connections here. They were talking about how the first three is kind of like that pilot episode, almost like a movie is how they viewed it. And so now this is the first one where we're going to try to kind of set the stage for a regular episodic, somewhat episodic stories with different levels of continuity. And they thought that it was a good idea to kind of have this first one where you get to open up and you see where, Adam's first chance here to kind of learn about his powers as He-Man, et cetera. So you have that whole sequence where he's doing like that. Holovision, holodeck, sequence of training. So you kind of get that a little bit. And then kind of to deal with the fact that we do have these altering identities that we have to keep secret. So it was an interesting way to kind of set the stage, and I guess necessary. Obviously, for me, a little bit of a step down from the original three. Just because you don't get that heavy dose like we did that you're going to get in like the intro where it's like setting a lot of mm-hmm. the character storyline, history, etc. I like those types of episodes better, so you're going to kind of take a step back, have a little bit more of a light episode here with some fun and just kind of get going. So maybe a minor step down for me in this one.
It is a little bit of a step back, but it's not really necessarily a step down. I thought it's more of, we mentioned this last episode, he just knows how to use the powers immediately. Well, this is the episode right now where, okay, the big three-parter, the big pilot, the big whatever, the beginning, He-Man wasn't in it for, he was in it for a good chunk, but he wasn't in it for like 90% of it. 90% of it was Adam, 10% of it was He-Man. So, here we have basically them using Adam's fears and doubt and everything else against him to try to figure out and whatever is going to work, whether they can get He-Man to show up or not, which 90% of the episode he doesn't, because, hello, Adam is captured and he doesn't have the sword.
Right.
I like, whereas, X number of years ago now when we were doing Tales of Eternia, after so many times of keep it secret, run around the corner, make sure they don't see or hear you, like that on repeat. I like that this story is giving us one episode of this, and I like how the, not necessarily excuse, but basically instead of Adam making an excuse to go fishing or to go sleep under a tree, he says, here, I'll go. I want to go with Stratos, or I want to do this, or I want to do that, and I want to, be more proactive. So as Adam, he is trying to be more proactive, even though he knows that he can't be at the time. But when he walks away to turn into He-Man, it isn't like, where'd Adam go now? Where'd that, I'm sure one of them, Tila, probably said something, but it's not as annoying as it was in Filmation. And it's more story-based than anything else here, I think. And I absolutely love it. I think that's great that they focus on Adam for an episode this early in the series.
Oh, yeah, I think it's definitely good that they focus on Adam for the episode. And that's not my problem. I just wish that there was some ways to maybe add some more elements of some mythology that they were really heavy on in the first three episodes. So not that it's a bad thing, just a personal preference. I like that they do talk about him and kind of his powers. I guess two, again, taking a direct plot from the first one. I don't know if it's it's not lazy or anything. I'm just saying it's something that we've already seen in the Filmation one, but it's fine as long as it's not going to be like a ton of these going forward.
Yeah.
More things that you go ahead.
Even belong to He-Man. It's a boy's garment bearing the royal crest, no doubt belonging to Randor's son, that callow Prince Alan.
Adam, impressive hounds you've got there. Can't tell a 16-year-old boy from the strongest man in the universe. And by the way, you're shedding.
You're gonna be shedding tears once us.
So if He-Man can't be sniffed out, how then to make him resurface? We play on his sentimentality. Remember how quickly he came to King Randor's rescue? We can't get to Randor anymore. The kingdom's on high alert. The palace is impossible.
Who said anything about Randor?
I'm speaking of his son, the prince. We have only to capture him, and He-Man will surely show up for the rescue. At this time, I'll be ready for him. Behold!
Bill, what it does is, it may be them homaging the Filmation version of the Disappearing Act, but it's them telling a fluid story, whereas we're not going to... Yes, every episode, I'm sure, and I'm pretty sure this is true because I remember watching it X number of years ago now, I'm sure every episode they're going to have a thing of, oh, where did Adam go? And Man-at-Arms is going to say, oh, well, you know, Man-at-Arms or He-Man or, oh, he's safe or he's whatever. But because, sadly, this series is so short versus, you know, 130 episodes over 2 years kind of a thing, it's not going to wear on me anyway as far as, like, you know, the whole keeping secret this, that, and the other thing. I think what they're more focused on here is the story. And they're
right.
Pulling it out beat by beat, and this specific episode is to show you how Adam deals with his dual identity.
Yeah, for sure. Anything specific about this episode that you wrote down as far as enjoyment?
There were a lot of great one-liners from He-Man and Skeletor. The two of them, I love the way that they interact with each other, and some of the things that Skeletor says to his cronies. Very well done. The animation gets better and better. I mean, we're only four episodes in, but some of the effects here are very cool. Writing and crafting a story that delves into Adam's character, as we've just kind of gone on about, is the right thing to do after the three-parter, I think. Because the three-parter, you had to set up the world, you had to set up the history of it, the elders, Skeletor, the Great Wall. There wasn't a lot of room. I mean, there was more room for Adam to be skeptical of the power in the three-parter than there was for him to actually, you know, accept it, which this should almost be called, you know, Adam's Acceptance or whatever the hell. I mean, the episode title is fine, but no, it is absolutely amazing. I still love this one. What about you?
It's Teela. Well, not just her, my father, too. They both think I chickened out in battle.
Adam, you cannot, under any circumstances, reveal that you are He-Man.
Yeah, no kidding. But that's no reason that Prince Adam, can't show them that I've got what it takes also. And who knows? If I step up in battle, I mean really step up, I'm no He-Man, but maybe he won't be needed.
Adam, I'm afraid that as long as there is evil in the land, He-Man will always be needed.
Yeah, a couple of things I noticed. Number one, obviously this episode shows Skeletor as kind of this uber intelligent and very formidable opponent. Mm-hmm. So I thought it was really good that they kind of gave him some of these more intellectual things that he's figuring out. One of them obviously being that I found interesting that they basically have Skeletor figure out He-Man's power source right away here in, you know, the first episode after the pilot. So he's already starting to come to realization that he's getting his power from the council, etc., and that, you know, there's a source of his power. It's not just something that he just inherently has. So
yep.
I thought that was pretty cool for sure. What about anything negative or a rating for this episode?
The only negative I have, and it's a negative I'm probably going to have throughout the entire series, is that Orko is still annoying.
Yeah.
Original Orko, voiced by, you know, the late, great Lou Scheimer, who, you know, ran Filmation and everything else, you know, that Orko, his voice was a lot less jarring than this one. And this one, they've built in, like, certain catchphrases, like tra-la-la and treadly-dee and treadly-dum or whatever the hell he said. This Orko is by far the worst of the two Orcos.
Yeah, so far I agree. It's hopefully will grow up on me later, but yeah, right now I'm not necessarily digging it. What about a rating for this one? What did you give this one?
3.5.
All right, we're not too far off. I'm at 3 even. Like I said, just a little bit down from the other one, still slightly above average, so not a terrible start. I get why they did it, so I'm not going to complain too much.
Yep.
All right, so I'm going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll talk about episode 5.
I know there are still details to work out in the trade dispute between Avion and Andrinos, but even so, please reconsider our proposal.
The people of Eternia must present a united front against Skeletor's evil.
My people and I look out for ourselves. We see no need for alliances. We're safe in the Mystic Mountains. Whoever this Skeletor is, he poses no threat to us.
He poses a threat to everyone. We must all work together to defeat him.
Alliances are for the weak. My people have survived for ages with no one's help. Andrinos is impenetrable. Our sensor screens can see an attack coming from far away.
Very well. You must do as you think best.
Buzzoff's making a serious mistake. He can't stay neutral in this. Skeletor won't rest until he's conquered all of Eternia.
All right, next up, guys, is episode 5, Sky War, written by Michael Reeves. The first episode not written... Dean Stefan that we're talking about today. Skeletor instigates a conflict between the Adrenids and the Avions in order to get his clutches on Ambrosia, the magical food of the Adrenids. So first time we're going to get to kind of get to see an in-depth look at some of these, I guess, alien races or however you want to call it, different races in the Eternian war planets or however you want to word it. So what did you think of this Adrenids versus Avions and Skeletor instigating mischief?
Well, first of all, Skeletor instigating the mischief... I know we mentioned this other times in the last 7 years on this podcast. Reminds me so much of the Quintesson Journal from Transformers, Generation 1, where the Quintessons paid these people to get better weapons, and then they paid the other people, so, you know, warring factions, yada, yada, yada. This is the first thing I thought of. Not in a bad way or anything like that. I think what Skeletor is doing is, because he's not dealing with them direct, he's straight up fooling them. I mean... It's too bad we couldn't have aired this podcast on April Fool's Day this year, because essentially that's what Sky War is. It's one big April Fool's joke from Skeletor to the Andrenids and the Avions. I love seeing, you know, Buzzoff's people and Stratos' people. I don't necessarily love seeing them go at each other's throats, but I don't remember a time in Filmation where Avion and Andrinos were... in the same episode. Like, Buzzoff had his episodes, Stratos had their episodes, whatever, but this is the first time, again, going back to what I said about last episode, and what I said last week about the three-parter, full-on story mode. There's no... This isn't like a one-off, you know, villain of the week type of deal. This series relies on full-on story mode, and dedicating a whole episode to the... prejudices on either side towards the Avions and the Andrenids, it's very, very interesting.
Buzzoff's got some nerve. If everyone felt that way, Skeletor would stomp all over Eternia.
This from the prince who somehow never seems to be on hand when a battle starts.
Whatever. Come on, Cringer, it's time for lunch.
Of all the empty-headed... Forgive me, Your Majesty, but I sometimes find your son ill-informed on matters of state.
Yes, it's true, I'm afraid. Adam isn't much help in this time of war.
Yeah, I agree. I think this is a cool way to kind of get into the fact that there's more to this world than just Adam and Skeletor. You know, obviously each episode has had, you know, Man-at-Arms and has had some of the villains, etc. But it's a good way to kind of make the world seem bigger right out the gate and kind of get the idea that there are all these different types of, I don't know what word to use other than races, but other species, other races, etc. throughout the planet. So I really like that. I like the idea that it kind of spins it a little bit where they're at each other, they're going at each other before they come together. And it's also kind of this whole idea that there is still somewhat of a almost like recruiting process or where they're kind of gaining allegiances, alliances, they're trying to gather, you know, friends and allies, etc., to the power and add to the masters, that type of thing. So I'm down with the plot for sure. Some things I really liked about the episode, like I mentioned, I really liked the setup with Skeletor pitting the two groups against each other. Also a cool way to allow us to highlight two of the masters in Buzzoff and Stratos and really get us a little bit more in depth on what makes them and kind of some character traits on them, some history, some setting, etc. Very cool animation at times, and obviously in this whole series, but I wanted to highlight it in this episode. There's a very cool sequence when Randor is talking and then Duncan comes into the scene at the like 11 minute mark where he's kind of in the background in the shadows and then he comes forward. That was really well done. So really like that stuff. Really the only nitpick I guess I have on this one is there's like these random beasts that Skeletor has at his disposal apparently that all the villains, evil warriors are using to transport into battle kind of. And those beasts that they were riding were like very useful. Like they were big. They're almost like dragon type characters that seem like they would have wreaked havoc. And if you have those types of things at your disposal, you think you would use them more instead of just having them here. And then I don't know if we will ever see them again. But
yeah, it's one of those things where he said at like the beginning of the episode, he was like, you know, it's ready or they're ready or whatever. And it was like introducing this new kind of, I don't want to say vehicle because obviously they're animals, but like, it was like them introducing a new part of the lore, whether we see it again or not. It was all right.
What about you? Anything that you wanted to highlight or dislike about the film episode?
Not really. I mean, I guess I wish He-Man was a little bit more proactive in trying to figure out, you know, I mean, yes, obviously he does figure out at the last moment that it's, you know, Skeletor, and he tells them at the last moment, before, you know, he actually goes up there and gets blasted by both armies, kind of a thing. So I wish that was handled a little differently, but still, it's such a good episode. It has such a good vibe to it. It has such, you know, story-revealing moments between both of these as you said, races of people, that it was a really good episode.
Yeah, how good was it, Mike? What rating do you give this one?
3.5.
All right, I am at the same spot, 3.5. I think it's an improvement on last episode a little bit. Maybe not quite to the level that we got in the first three-parter, but still a decent episode overall. Nothing to complain about. So we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, the last episode for today, episode 6, The Deep End. Should I sing again?
No.
Okay.
Some kind of power surge emanating from the Sea of Rakash. Nearly off the scale.
Ooh, off the scale? That's bad, huh?
Yes, and if the object causing that power surge is what I suspect it is, let's just hope it hasn't fallen into Skeletor's evil hands.
Well? Weapon test activating in 3, 2. I don't know what happened. Sorry, boss.
Much as I'd enjoy seeing Triclops receive his punishment, this was not his doing.
Oh? If you have some tidbit of information to relay, Evil Lynn.
Much more than a tidbit. It's sharp, it's shiny, and it's possibly the most powerful element in the universe.
Give us another clue. What's it rhyme with?
She's speaking of the Corodite crystal. So, the crystal still exists. Of course. It was strong enough to topple the mystic wall. No mere explosion could destroy it. Why didn't I think of this before?
You didn't even think of it this time.
You are fortunate I'm in a chipper mood, dear Evelyn.
All right, cruising right along today. Episode 6 is the last one up. That's The Deep End, written by Brooks... I'm going to probably say this wrong, but Brooks Wachtel.
Yep, Wachtel. You're right.
He-Man must save Man-at-Arms from the belly of a sea beast threatening Castle Grayskull.
Again.
Mike, I'm going to go right to you on this one.
Oh, boy.
Remember how much I loved that Merman sequence in the original pilot?
Yeah, I know. You didn't.
Any guesses on if I liked this episode?
Yeah, I know. You didn't. I mean, I like that it highlights Merman. I like that we have a little adventure with Merman, with him stealing the crystal and everything else from Skeletor. We see that not all the evil warriors are always going to follow what Skeletor wants them to do. So I like that aspect of it. I can't believe I'm saying this, but I'm right there with Tila. We can't destroy the beast. Man-at-Arms is in its belly. What, again? Like, really? You had to do that again? And then to enhance it with having Man-at-Arms have the crystal thing and have the crystal affect the creature? Like, really?
Yeah, it's like they had the pilot. It wasn't quite long enough for the 3 episodes, so they needed to insert something. So they're like, hey, this episode that we're about to do, let's just insert part of that. But then they still did the episode. So it's like, you just did this. We literally just saw like a 5 to 8 minute segment, I swear to God, in that one episode, at least that long. And now we're going to get 22 minutes of the same thing. Like, okay, yeah. I love the interactions between Skeletor and Evil-Lyn so far.
Yep, those are good.
I like she has this line because he's saying something about how I think Triclops or somebody didn't think of something when he hadn't either. So Evil-Lyn has the line, you didn't even think about it this time.
Yeah.
So that was good. I like the kind of the seeds they've been planting, kind of the tension there between the two as being kind of the two smartest in the group. Yeah. And also we do get a little bit more with continuity here as far as... they reveal accidentally because part of the episode, obviously, like we talked about, Man-at-Arms is in the belly of the sea beast, etc. And then the sea beast, after having an interaction with the crystal and the sword, goes for Castle Grayskull, however that happened. But somehow he learns that there's power at Castle Grayskull.
That's where the sword's going to power. Jumps into the belly of the beast to save Man-at-Arms, and then the sword touches the crystal. The crystal, it activates or it whatever it does whatever it's going to do to the beast, and then because
somehow
of the
beast knows that's where it comes from.
Well because of the sword and because of the power between the sword and the power between the crystal, then they head to Grayskull.
Yeah, so they're heading to Grayskull, and then obviously Man-at-Arms gives Tila a directive that if it's getting too close, destroy the beast whether he's inside it or not. You can't let it attack Castle Grayskull. Yeah. Well, we learned to find out, come to find out, which we wouldn't have known, I guess, otherwise, because, you know, in the Filmation series, we always know that Castle Grayskull is important. Skeletor is always trying to break into Castle Grayskull. He's always trying to get to the power, you know, get to the sorceress and the, you know, get inside past the drawbridge, etc. So we've always viewed Castle Grayskull as just this common thing that everybody knows is important for the most part, at least Skeletor and He-Man and then those that know the identities. I didn't ever consider the fact that up to this point, I guess, in the series, which is genius to me, that Castle Grayskull is just seen as this, like, pile of ruins, like this old abandoned time, you know, artifact of ancient times, so to speak. Mm-hmm. So by doing that, Man-at-Arms reveals that there is something important about Castle Grayskull, and Skeletor, being the intelligent character that he has been painted so far in the series, immediately picks up on that and learns now that there is something important about Castle Grayskull, because why would Man-at-Arms have his daughter, you know, risk killing him just for this pile of old building type thing. So that was a cool element, I thought.
Yeah, that was very cool. And plus, I also got, and it's mainly because I have seen the series before, obviously, but every time that we only saw it, I think, once in this episode, but every time in this episode that the Sorceress is shown during the Grayskull attack, I'm like, it isn't really going to matter if Man-at-Arms is around anymore, because she still has one more ... and we'll save that for another episode, because anyone that's seen this series, they put a new spin on the quest for Teela, and it's really friggin' good.
Yeah. So we'll get to that. Some little nitpicks on this one, I guess. Like I said before, the premise of this episode is pretty boring. So at one point you have Man-at-Arms swimming in stomach acid. I don't think that should be possible. Now, they don't completely gloss over it, because the stomach acid does do damage. It eats up part of his armor. There's even a line from He-Man that says, you know, the stomach acid lightened up his armor so he could carry him, etc. So the stomach acid is eating through metal and whatever else his armor is made out of, but not his skin.
Yeah.
Good form.
He-Man!
Come on. We might need to put that practice to use.
Yeah, so that was a little much, but I mean, I can overlook it because, again, it's one of those things where this is the second time they've done this. Technically, if you really want to think about it, Man-at-Arms, because of the stomach acid, should have been dead. He should at least be a quadriplegic or something, paraplegic, from the first time he was in there, because he swam through it then, too, and he didn't have any armor on at that point.
Right. So, for sure. You know, it's weird. It's a weird episode, because I really love Merman, so you would think that I would like a episode that has a lot of Merman in it, but I just think it's coming so quickly after they had just done something in the pilot. I don't know why they wouldn't have kept this one a little bit or taken that part out of the original episode. Either way, it still probably wouldn't work for me, because I just think the premise is boring overall, of just having this character stuck in some monster's insides. It's not a plot that's going to do anything for me. So I'm unfortunately at the lowest that I've been so far through six episodes, and I'm at a two.
I'm at a two as well. It's
all right. So, I mean, there's way more better. There's so many better episodes to look forward to in the series, if my memory serves right.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, this is, I'm guessing, going to be one of the lower ones that I rate the whole series, but we'll see. I just, let's get into better stuff.
Yeah, the only, I don't know. So,
what about any the characters that stood out over the course of these three episodes? Or obviously, you mentioned that Orko's still kind of on your
nerves. Orko's still on my nerves. Several episodes I mentioned that everybody gets a power sword except Orko. Mm-hmm. There are episodes where I've said, oh, Orko can have a Havoc Staff, but there isn't really anything either way with these three episodes that really stick out that, you know, make me feel like I have to give out a Power Sword or a Havoc Staff. Again, it's not just because we just came off the worst He-Man cartoon ever, it's just because that, maybe it is because of that, but I just find this so much more enjoyable on a whole, and I enjoyed this, you know, 7 years ago when you and I both first rewatched it separately just to watch it. Well, you had watched it for the first time, I think, back then. I was rewatching it.
Yeah, that was the first time through, yeah.
Yeah, I was rewatching it back then. You had never seen it before, and, you know, I enjoyed it then. I enjoy it now. It's a hell of a lot better than New Adventures, and I don't know if I can put away with the fact of this is better because of that being so awful. As we've said,
this is better because it's a good cartoon, regardless. Well,
yeah, exactly. But you know, as we've said in Adele's Deep End over here, it's I don't know what it is about Merman, but his episodes generally are not good, and not this specific series.
Yeah, I wish they would do more with him.
In general, it just seems like and. I love Scott McNeil. I really, really do. It's a more creepy version of Waspinator.
It needs a little bit more of the water sounds to me that Alan Oppenheimer did to make it a little bit more effective. But for me, I think the biggest thing that I'm going to take away from these three the episodes is basically the continuation of Skeletor just being really smart. I really like the plans that he's coming up with and the plotting that he's doing. I still love the balance between intimidation, you know, just natural badass, and just a tiny bit of humor so far. Not that I couldn't stand him being even a little bit more funny, but I just like what they're doing with him so far. And they also, something that stood out in this episode, He-Man being smart too, like in that second episode that we watched today, you know, him thinking about the fact that the whatever they got from the Andrenids, I can't remember right now, the Ambrosia.
Yeah,
that he knew that that was going to be toxic to non-Andrenids or whatever. Like, he knew that he could, not just that he knew that it was bad, but then he goaded Skeletor into taking more and more to the point where it was going to, you know, basically explode in his face type thing, where he's going to lose all his power. Everybody else was. It was going to have a backfire, kind of like an OD situation. So I think they did a good job of highlighting both of their intelligence levels. So yep. Those were the two that stood out for me.
Yeah, and with that middle episode, Sky War, it was like, oh, hey, Skeletor has more power. Skeletor's costume changes because he has more power. Like, I'm like, ooh, this is 87 He-Man. This is the movie. This is not the, you know, multiple personality changing looks of Skeletor in the new ass adventures of He-Man.
Another cool thing they did in the episode, which I forgot to mention, is that they, a lot of times in these types of series, cartoons from the 80s, 90s, etc., even 2000s, if you do get that interaction with that that other world, like a, you know, like in a series like He-Man, where you have lots of different, you know, warriors, you have lots of different villains, and at different times they go in and kind of explore that species, but a lot of times they only still have the one main character involved. Like, picture this episode, and the only people that talk would be Stratos and Buzzoff. I like the fact that that wasn't the case here. You even get two of the Avion characters named, or no, one of the Avions and one of the Andrenids. So you have Hawk, the female Avion, and it gets named, gets some talking lines, and then what's the guy's name? Something Grad, not Stalingrad, because that's a country and whatever. But there's a character with a name just like that from the Andrenids that you get to, like, he's kind of like his first in command.
Yeah,
it's voiced by Gary Chalk, I believe. Gary Chalk or David Kaye, one of the two. I think it's Gary Chalk. But I like that they kind of got to see a little bit more. It wasn't just Buzzoff and Stratos and everybody else was like the silent henchmen. So that was kind of cool, too.
Yep.
That's all I got for my thoughts.
Ah, the intercepted transmission was received by Andrino Skeletor. Perfect. It's only a matter of time before their two armies will be flying down each other's throats, leaving us to loot the Ambrosia.
Absolutely. All right. Well, I think that's going to do it for us. No breaks, no nothing. Thank you for listening to us as we are the Masters of Grayskull. If you'd like to get in contact with us, leave feedback for the show, there are several ways to do so. Visit the website, geekcastradio.com, where you can comment on all of our other episode posts from this podcast and all the other podcasts we do. Leave the show's feedback in iTunes. Please do this. Follow us on Twitter. You can follow at geekcastradio for the network, at Pow of Grayskull for the show. I'm at TF2 and Mike. What is your Twitter?
The important one. I'm at Optimus Solo.
Ladies and gentlemen, remember, that's the unimportant one. Follow us on Facebook. Facebook.com/GeekCastRadioNetwork. We hope you enjoyed the Grayskull goodness today, and don't forget to join us in our next adventure as we will take a look at the next three episodes of He-Man and the Masters of the Universe, which are Lessons, Siren Song, and The Ties That Bind. For now, I am TFU and Mike with
Optimus Solo.
By the power and for the honor of Grayskull, we have the power.
Ta-da!
You three, intercept him. He-Man must not reach the Mystic Mountains.
Kid?
Yes?
Shut up.
Beyond the Night is the GCRN's latest review podcast. We are covering everything in the Knight Rider television universe. From the classic 80s TV series to the 1991 reunion film, Team Knight Rider, and the 2008 relaunch series as well. So join TFG and Mike and Dion the Music Man as they go in-depth in Beyond the Night, only on Geekcast Radio Network. You can find Beyond the Night in iTunes and on www.geekcastradio.com.
Kit?
Yes, Michael?
Just keep driving.